Something from the newspaper today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. John Marks is a well-known columnist for the Dispatch Argus. We'll get to know him a little bit better today before moving on to Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. Okay, Marks. You were the guy.
I'm the guy.
You're the guy that had me do a fashion shoot. I was the only person ever to wear a white shirt and tie in a Harley Davidson outfit.
Here's the beauty of that for 100 years that we've known each other. You said yes, and you were always and always have been willing to be the patsy. And that's the beauty that's always been you. And part of that, and you both know who Joe Payne is, who was one of our managing editors for so many years, and has since jumped to the private sector. He a wonderful mind, and always thought, who was the most non Harley Davidson guy in the Quad Cities? And take no offense to that, Don. That was you.
It would be Don.
And we had that conversation, and I'd love to see him in a leather jacket, maybe chaps if we could get it to go. You pulled it off magnificently, and we were forever in your debt.
Well, I'll collect on that someday.
Yes, someday. You'd like to see the check first, I'm sure.
How did you get into the newspaper game?
Wow. By accident, to be honest with you. Sports background growing up, played sports, and had lost my job. And because I knew a little bit about baseball, and you both remember Nolan Hurt, who was a sports editor, and with Murray at the Argus, Nolan knew that I was out of work making a transition and said, hey, would you like to cover some baseball games? And I covered a Quad City Angels game on a Wednesday. Things got tossed, as you both know, in our business, kind of got tossed upside down. And it became increasingly, I covered another baseball game on a Thursday, on a Friday, on a Saturday. And before you know it, I was the full-time, part-time guy doing sports. And when the Smalls purchased the Argus from the Potter family, I was fortunate enough to be part of the Get to Stay guys. And soon after that, I got a full-time job with the Dispatch and the Rock Island Argus writing sports, and did that for 8 years. And then celebrated my 25th anniversary as a columnist over the weekend, because it was a bit of bittersweet for me, because I grew up with Murray Hurt was my favorite sports writer growing up. He was my favorite columnist with Mike Roykel growing up. I thought the world, the sun rose and set with both, and Murray penned with great humor, as did Roykel. And then when Murray took ill, as you both know back then, Mr. Small and Mr. Taylor. Mr. Small owns our company, and Mr. Taylor is our publisher, came to me and said, we'd like you, with Murray's blessing, to step into it, a little step, and not sit, not anything, because you both know you don't sit. It'd be like me sitting in your chair today, Don. You don't sit in a legend's chair. It's just – and I said yes, and I ventured into an area where I was swimming upstream for the first 6 months. It was a battle. And because sports, you're right, sports, it comes naturally. You make an opinion in sports. I knew that. Well, the people side of thing was a little bit, and making it sure was with Murray's blessing that you stayed in a certain venue, that it was harder for a while. But
well, you've more than made up for it.
Thank you for saying that. I'm grateful, especially with somebody who writes as well as you. I really appreciate that. And then Father Time next to us, who does such a great job, and I still think it's, and I'm not going to editorialize, but I do. I still think we're a viable entity. I think there's a place for the print and the electronic, and we've kind of done that pretty well, and not patting ourselves on the back. I think there's a place for both, and it's been a wonderful run for me.
I just hope we can keep a place in it for print. But the world changes in ways that you When you're comfortable doing something and that something starts to change, it is unsettling.
It is unsettling. And going back to those first days of learning and now having to adapt and being on Twitter and on Facebook and so many other venues because I understand it's a 24-hour news cycle. I don't have a gauge how long the hard copy. Maybe you both might be able to figure it out before I do. But I don't know if in 10 years I won't be able to use my phone as my source or my tablet as my source. Maybe that the print area of things might be gone. I don't know. I hope not. I hope it's an entity that stays forever. I still love that's something in my hand every morning.
Yeah. Hard to imagine a world without newspapers.
It is. And I started reading newspapers when I started school. And I have never been without a newspaper. And I will read every newspaper I can get my hands on. But the reason is because I have some basis of trust in a newspaper. A reporter can't just make things up. He or she has to answer to an editor who answers to a publisher. And that means that there has to be some semblance of accuracy in what's done. I was stunned to read that over 40% of the people in this country now get their news from the Internet.
Right.
Where there are so many fake news sources that'll say anything in order to attract people to the site so they can sell ads on the
site.
Plus,
it's news in 2 or 3 minutes, right,
yeah.
At most.
But
it's check your
It's
phone.
Mostly false. It's all made
that's part,
up.
That's part of the problem. And that's where do you draw that line? You made a great point that 40% – how much of that is just a flashy tweet or a post somewhere or whatever on a site that someone's just trying to garner attention? So, again, you hearken back to a reporter must garner facts. They must be checked. And those sources and by which quotes come from must be validated before they become. I still think that will always hold and ring true for our business. And I think that's the one thing that sets the newspaper side of things apart from everything else.
One of the columns you do, and I want to make sure I get this in before you two guys, talk your heads off.
I beg your pardon, sir.
To the best of my knowledge, when did you get – how long have you been doing
that? Oh, my goodness. Since – I got it from Murray. And he did –
Did he do that?
He did. He did every – once a month or every few weeks he would do something. It's none of my business. And people love – people send me things. And then the funny thing about it is people send you things and they beg you not to attribute – them to,
right.
Attribute them to them. That's the name. Well, please use this, but don't say my name. But don't use my name. I if I could, I'm in a coffee shop somewhere. There's always somebody sharing. If I'm in a coffee shop or I'm at the grocery store or at a big box or out in public, I listen to the way people talk. I listen to waitresses, whomever, and always try to let them know that I may use what they just said.
I have to tell you that I spend mornings. Down in the APRIS room where I ask, figure out questions for Scribble and read for Scribble and stuff. And every time they read the Argus from 9 to 10, and every time, to the best of my knowledge, is there for that day, the two people reading together fight for who gets to read it.
Bless them. I'm grateful for that. But.
So because it's just a fun thing to read. But it seems to me that it's – one of those, it's got to be like being Mark Twain and Sam Clemens. Poor Sam Clemens is there, and Mark Twain is, Mark Twain writes, to the best of my knowledge, is there a John Marks that sort of resents the popular, or are we getting the real John Marks here?
I hope you, well, if you ask anyone in my family, there's a smart aleck in there somewhere, I think. But
that isn't quite the real John Marks.
No, not everything. There's a little too much cynicism sometimes, and that's just not me. Now, that you may enjoy. The best thing that I consider what I get to do is writing a column about a person.
Well, that's a whole different thing. But it seems to me that the danger in something like To the Best of My Knowledge is that it's like the tail wagging the dog. Pretty soon the column begins to change you.
Yep, and then you kind of draw into some of that. I believe there is, and I'm not that. I hope
because
I'm
you have to be listening
for everything,
clever remarks,
wherever you are.
That's a common problem. I mean, you have that as a professor.
Oh, I do.
I had it as a TV person, yep. Also in politics.
Yes,
that the public perceives you a certain way. And after a while, you may not be able to find the real you in that public you.
Well, I threatened often to, in addition to my lecture, to having a TV monitor by my side with me arguing with the tweet that's up there pontificating, you know, tweet that's really ridiculous.
Yeah.
because
come off your hard horse tweet.
Even as I was saying that, part of me was saying, you know, come on now.
No, you know, I know what you mean.
And but it seems to me that the constant having to think up, you know, 15 or 20 ideas for the best of my knowledge is a dangerous thing in a way.
It can be. But the other end of it is if you spend enough time walking, driving, you try to balance the funny cynicism side to it with something that's homey and let people know that there are other people out there doing good things. And
now, that sounds like Murray Hurt, because I mentioned before when I was talking to Murray and told him I don't know how he stood doing a daily column. And he said, well, you have the tougher job. I said, what do you mean? I write once a week. He said, well, that's problem. Yep. You have to find a topic and you sort through all these things and you decide. Says, I don't have to decide. The first thing I see is what I write about.
That's good point. No, and that's the genuineness of and the easiness of what I get to do is it's, you know, it's several times a week that you're trying to do something. The other end of it is, and if I can share one piece of advice that I got from a really, really wise man in our business, and he happens to own the paper that I work for. He said, sometime in someone's life, something positive should be written about them before their obituary.
Mm-hmm.
And I not being homespun, mm-hmm. but I think that's the neatest thing that falls into line of what we do.
Pardon the pun, John, but your columns about people like that are to die for.
Nice of you to say that, especially if someone with your background. Wow.
Well, no, those are really sensitively done, I think, and
you know,
without being schmaltzy.
With that, though, is if you write one of those columns, there are all kinds of people who are your friends and who know you who think, when's my turn?
Yeah, right. is that clown finally going to get me in the end?
Do you also get suggestions from people about people to write about?
That's the beauty. And I know things have changed. I will get emails. I will get phone calls. I will get texts. If someone sees me on the street, in a coffee shop, wherever it might be, there is always someone out there that they think is worthy. And probably 85% of the things, the ideas about are generated by people sharing with me, someone's done something. I have a young man who played baseball for me at Allman High School. And he had he's 105 now. He was 104 at that time, 104-year-old great-grandfather who was a Cubs fan. And
right.
I felt sorry for him up until a month ago. And
he
said it was the one thing keeping him alive was that he hinged it. And, of course, this year we used him to beat the band.
Right.
But that was those type of situations. A guy that will drop a $100 bill off at someone who doesn't have anything, or those who really doesn't want to be noticed. There's a 95-year-old who I'm trying to get to. There's a 95-year-old lady in Port Byron who's played the piano and organ almost 80 years every Sunday in her church. My goodness, I'd like to. I'm still trying to find her. those are the greatest. Trying to track her down. Amazing people. I mean, there's those stories, and it's not schmaltzy. Those stories are out there. And the neat thing about it is I get help trying to find those.
You know, I've been talking to people on radio for I don't know how many years. It's a long, long time. And I've found over time that everyone has an interesting life. You know, most people think they live rather humdrum lives. And if you get to talking to them, if you listen carefully, you can find something you can hook onto, and all of a sudden, that person comes alive in a way that you had not expected. And that's what I love about conversations rather than interviews. I'd hate an interview when somebody goes in with a list of questions. I think just introduce yourself and start talking.
Yeah.
That's it.
But that's tip of the hat to you. You understand that the interview style – now, sometimes you'll find that person who's a three-word answer person, you may have to hope that you had a couple questions set aside. But like you said, sit down, introduce yourself, and let's have a chat. And then when we're done, we'll deduce everything we just did, and we'll go from there. But that's the neat thing of it.
I went through a half-hour program one time with a person I really knew well, and I got yes, no, maybe for 25 minutes. 25 is the longest, hardest time I've ever been on the air. And finally, I asked a question, and she lit up like a candle and started, and I had to cut her off so we could end the show.
Isn't that always – it takes forever for some people to get into the flow of the conversation. But fortunately, I get to do some television as well, and to your point – you're standing there with a microphone post-game. You talk to the coach. He has all the right answers. Then you put a 16-year-old high school male or female on the spot with a camera right there and personality plus until you say, well, can you break down this game for me and what'd you think of it? I thought we played great. Boom. Then what do you do? Right. And it's not the young person's fault.
Right.
They look up and see that red light on, and you know, Don, and you see that red light. Whoa, sometimes it – it tends to trigger an emotion that you don't have.
And, of course, when I write, it's not so much about people, it's about things.
Right.
And so that kind of drains a lot of the emotion out of it. And I try to drain as much emotion from my writing as I can to try to be objective, which is really hard to do.
That's got to be, especially for where you rest in every Sunday and in our section. In our paper, where you rest, that you have to – no, that's hard.
Yeah.
And to generate – plus you have to generate good, bad, and different for somebody to take a side somewhere. There has to be another side.
But it's – but coming up with it every week, I haven't missed now except for when I was grievously ill. I haven't missed for a long time. But I tell you, when the deadline starts to loom –
I couldn't do it.
Just hate it. But
oh, really?
There's no.
With all your writing experience?
Not. I cannot do. No.
It's got to be your.
No.
I wish people could see your face right there. No.
Trust me, I can't do it.
It's got some no written all over it.
John, how much of your workday is out and about, and how much sitting in an
great
office?
Question.
Well, probably, where's the great answer?
Well, okay, right? I'm trying to divide it up to make it actually. It's maybe 70-30 out and back in.
Okay.
There's some days where you just have to sit and you're stuck by the telephone waiting to set up, because there's other avenues of what I get to do, appointments for. I get to speak in schools and things of that nature, and all the you know, the meetings and stuff, which I'm sure drive both of you enough. There are some of those. But no, probably 70-30 out and about, and then into the office. Again, a wise man said, I don't need to see you at your desk to know that you're doing what you're doing. So
that is the kind of employer you want to work for. It really is.
And you know who I'm talking about, who happens to be our publisher.
And
now, once in a while, I will get scared because – and you know who that person is, Don. He will dial me up in the morning, and he's probably the first in the building. And it might be 5:45, it might be 6:30, 7, whatever it might be. And if I miss that call, I'm in terror for the whole until I get in, because you know, you want to make sure you catch him early and help if he has something that he needs done. But he understands that if you're out doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Well, you're out with us right now, but we're going to let you go back in. John Marks, a longtime writer for the Dispatch Argus, and a fellow who was not above embarrassing someone as
one of the highlights of my career, Don. Thank you.
That's okay. I still have the photographs from that fashion
beautiful
series. But right now I have the honor to introduce somebody else, Garrison Keillor. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. You know, talking to John Marks reminds me of my admiration for people in the newspaper business. I don't know how they do it.
There's no way I could ever, deadline after deadline.
Yeah, I remember a friend of mine got into the newspaper business, and he started, in those days, you started writing obits, and then you move up into other departments.
Right.
But just the business of, course, now obits are written by funeral homes, so things have changed there. But to be thrown into a newspaper room where you have to report and get it out on time,
right,
and just keep going. The pressure on those jobs, I think, is enormous.
Yeah. No, as I said, I would not have lasted at all.
Uh-huh.
I can't imagine having gotten used to that kind of a demanding, grueling schedule.
Well, it's rather frightening to put words on paper. At least, you know, when I start writing, I am very cautious, and I will stop and get up and walk away and come back and look at what I've done and then start again. And the idea that you just sit down and write, you've got to get it right the first time.
Oh, I've sat for hours waiting for the first sentence to come, you know, and it's a stupid way of writing, but I just can't put anything less than perfection on that.
And yet you have written books?
Yeah, it wasn't fun. writing is the worst thing and the best thing, right? When it's going well, when it's all coming together, that's a great feeling. But boy, when you sit there and you see all this jumble of stuff, and how is this going to go together?
I don't know how you explain that, because there are times, you know, I know people think, oh, yeah, you should try digging ditches for a living and then tell me how tough it is to write.
Right.
But there are times when you've been slogging away and all of a sudden it's as if a veil lifts and you write.
Yeah.
And the stuff just comes. And you think, oh, boy, where has this been?
Yeah. Well, the problem is getting it released, right?
Yeah.
And in my problem has always been, and I think that is for a lot of student writers, the judge gets in the way too soon. That's stupid. Nobody wants to hear that. That's dumb.
Yeah.
You know, and once you can get through those voices that are negating you, then I think everybody's got ideas, great ideas inside their heads, imaginative ideas. But the judge comes in and said, no, didn't do that right.
Yeah, the judge is tough.
The judge ought to come in, but at the end.
Yeah.
And
but,
not at the beginning.
But you're right. The judge interferes all the way through. There's always, as you're writing a sentence, you have second and third thoughts, even as you're writing the darn thing.
Exactly.
So what keeps you going?
Well, the little rewards that come when now and then you do it okay.
Uh-huh. And then you write it all and read it and think, better throw this away.
Yeah, I know.
We're going to throw away this program right now, though. Roll Tweet and I'll be back next week, and we hope you will, too, for the next edition of Scribble.